Jess, welcome to the podcast. I have to tell you, it is such an honor to have you today. I have been watching your new book, Breaking Free from Body Shame, just circle the internet and seeing how it is affecting so many women and setting them free. I can't wait to have this conversation with you. But to start, would you just share a little bit about your heart behind this book and why you felt led to write it?
So for me, I felt called to write this book, I would say for two reasons. There was a big picture reason, and then there was a more timely, thoughtful reason. The big picture reason is that I only ever write about my weaknesses. And I feel like I perceive that that is where I have the most authority. I am my life verse is 2 Corinthians 12:9. His power is made perfect in our weaknesses. And so I've always been a girl who likes to use my words to compel people. I've always been a girl who has a lot of words and has a lot of thoughts, but my mode of operation as an author has been, I never want to get on a pedestal that I'm going to fall off of. I never want to try to be the expert about something. There's a really specific reason why I haven't written a parenting book. You know what I'm saying? I want to really let my weaknesses, let my greatest pain points hit the light. Be honest about that. Let people see me repent. Let people see me experience God. Let people see me experience His grace and just share from that, work from that testimony. And so I always knew that being said, the big picture reason why I wrote this book is I always knew I would write a book about body image because for me, it's been the greatest area of weakness in my whole life. My earliest memory in my body is feeling like it wasn't good. My greatest moments of pain and defeat and shame and despair had to do with how I felt about my body. And because of that, for me in this particular, the past few years, this particular season of my life where I've experienced the most freedom and healing and hope has been in my body. So in the back of my head, I always knew the body book was going to happen. I began writing more traditionally in a publishing sense, around 2014, 2015. And one of the very first conversations I had with my editor who helped me, edit Breaking Free from Body Shame, Stephanie, as I said, you know, eventually a body book. We're going to have to do a body book because that's where I'm experiencing a lot of freedom. And that was 7 years ago. But specifically why now, why this book had to come out was because of the pandemic. I was not slated to write a book in 2020. I was taking the year off from book writing, taking the year to be with my family and just to kind of rest and hear from God about what was next. And Stephanie, my editor, called me about 6 weeks into the pandemic. Well, backing up first, I had a meeting with her on March 4th, 2020, right before the pandemic hit. And her and I went to lunch and we sat at a table at a restaurant and talked about the body book and what it would be like to write that book. And that night on the plane ride home, without telling anybody, I just kind of pulled my laptop out and pounded out the first chapter of the book because I had some thoughts about it. But then put my laptop up, came home, the pandemic hit. Definitely didn't think about that again. And about 6 weeks later, she called me and she just asked one question. She said, how do you think women are feeling about their bodies right now? And I said, they're feeling pretty bad. And she said, how do you think they're going to be feeling a year from now? And I said, I think they're going to be feeling pretty bad. And so I had no idea the level of tension and distrust and animosity that we'd be experiencing and even expressing about our bodies and towards our bodies. I could not have even bargained for that. And I wouldn't have wanted to. But I think the time was now because we're so confused about how we're supposed to feel about our bodies and what we're supposed to think about them.
So Jess, you say that you had a friend who spoke something into you when they said, I used to feel like you, but I don't anymore. And I think so many of us have looked in the mirror and said or thought horrible things about our bodies. And then we wake up and we say, I'm not going to do that anymore. I am made in the image of God and my body is good. But then we fall into this cycle and we just repeat it over and over again. So will you share a little bit about your body image journey with us and how you finally broke that cycle of body shame?
Yeah, I had this friend who did come to me and say, this was in a season actually where I was struggling with depression. And she said, you know, I used to feel like you, I think you could feel better. And at the time I was really fighting her on I was fighting her on like whether or not I was okay. I was like, I think I'm fine. I'm good. Everything's fine. And she was like, but I used to feel like you, and I think you could feel better. And so that kind of offer, that kind of exactly what you just said, that kind of wild hope put on the table really shifted everything for me and changed everything for me, because I thought maybe if I'm not feeling okay, I could actually feel better. But that was the most important part for me of breaking free from body shame, of saying, I don't feel okay. I don't feel okay right now. And I had to do that in the same way with this journey. I had to get to a place where I said, like, I don't feel free and I don't love my body. And it's been interesting in publishing and in putting the book out that one of the most interesting and for me, sad rebuttals I've heard to breaking free from body shame is the women who say, like, I don't think this is really that big of an issue. I don't think this is really that big. I think it's just you. I think people are just sensitive. Or like, I don't know, maybe we should just think about our bodies less. And I don't know. I don't necessarily understand that perspective. Maybe those people don't talk to women a lot, or maybe they don't watch TV. I'm not sure. But I can't open my eyes without seeing a woman hate her body or talk about hating her body. I can't go to church without hearing a woman talk about hating her body. And I certainly can't consume any media. But that being said, I think that I really do believe in abundance. I believe that Jesus Christ came that we might have life abundant. And I think that while we're alive, we're going to live under the effects of the fallen world. We're going to have sickness. We're going to have pain. We're going to have all kinds of hurt. And yet spiritually, there is more for us on the table. There's freedom, there's healing, there's abundance, there's hope, all of that. And I just want it. I want all of what God has to offer. I don't want to leave anything behind. So that's a really long answer to say, I actually genuinely believe the most important part of breaking free from body shame is women being able to say, I don't feel free in my body. I don't actually love my body, but I want to believe that I could. I want to believe that God does, and that changes everything. There's a lot of steps after that, but honestly, it's like, what I call it, the gateway drug to self-care, you know? So I always say, like, taking care of my skin is like the gateway drug to self-care. When I wash my face, like, then I want to drink water. When I wash my face, then I want to brush my hair. When I wash my face, then I really care about like how I'm taking care of the rest of my body. This is a really silly example, but that's the same way, like deciding that you want to actually love your body and deciding that maybe letting this truth that you don't, letting that hit the light will lead to so much freedom.
Yeah. So I know that you are probably getting asked this a lot, but what position do you take in the book regarding the pursuit of weight loss and wanting to change how our bodies look or feel?
People ask me all the time, like, what's the plan? Tell me what the plan is. Do you get to chapter 8 and there's like an 8-step plan or like a 2-step plan or like a 4-step plan? What's the plan? So my perspective on weight loss, my perspective on exercise, my perspective on diet is I think worship is the plan. And I think worship looks different for everybody. And Romans 12 tells us that when we submit our bodies to God, that we will hear his true and perfect will for us. And so I absolutely see scenarios where people are going to be like, listen, the healthiest thing for me, the healthiest thing for my body would be to lose a few pounds so that I could, take better care of myself, so that I could love my people better, so that I could serve and move better. And I would say, like, that is a you and God. That is what you get to hear from God. And how you do that and how you move forward in that, if it's worshipful, if it's treating your body like it's good, I will be the last person who could say that's right and or wrong. The questions I would ask and that I do ask in the book are, what's the motivation for weight loss? What are the benchmarks that we're using? I think that a lot of the benchmarks that we use for what we should weigh specifically in American culture tend to be pretty shame-based. I'm referencing things like, I weighed this particular weight at my wedding and I've always wanted to get back to that. Like, was that worshipful? Is that healthy? Is that realistic? Is that good for your body? So if I was going to sit with a friend, I might ask lots of like sweet pokey questions like that. But I think the plan, the stance for me is worship.
So we're talking a lot about how our bodies are good. Is it wrong for us to long to make them look or feel better?
Here's the deal. I think it's a really good tool of the enemy that he has pitted freedom against a lot of other godly things. So in our minds, and at least in culture. So I honestly didn't anticipate it. I could have never anticipated it talking about this book, but I couldn't get over the amount of people that were like, okay, right, bringing everybody to shame, but like, we should also be healthy. And I keep being like, who told you that health and freedom are against each other? Like, who told you that these are not the, they're not like even different sides of the coin. They are the same boulder, like crushing shame in our souls. But I get it because culture does this to us and the enemy does this to our minds. So, I think that when we go after Jesus, we will find freedom. And I think that when we go after Jesus, we will find health and we will find wholeness. My personal story also, you know, everybody on the internet, we just assume everybody knows everything about us. Sometimes I feel like everybody knows everything about me. Like everybody knows my story. But so when people are like, so you just like, you don't work out ever. And I'm like, I literally am a bar instructor. I became a bar instructor after writing Breaking Free Your Body Shame, because in the book, I asked people like, what would you do if your body was good? And when I wrote that, I knew I had to follow up and say like, well, I know what I would do. I became a bar instructor. And so I'm a physical like exercise gal. And my personal story is that I didn't really even begin to understand that I liked exercise until I broke free from body shame. I started this journey for me in 2014. And that same year began running half marathons and then full marathons. And I couldn't even move my body like that until I believed that I had the permission to. You know what I'm saying? And so for me, I couldn't even like really run after health or wholeness until I wasn't living under the extreme effects of defeat in my own mind. So that being said, I don't think health and freedom are at war. I think endorphins are scientific and God's actual gift to us. Moving our body, experiencing vitamin D, getting endorphins, like feeling wholer and healthier in our body, I think is God's actual gift to us in the same way that rest is God's actual gift to us. Here's my only like caveat and pin is that I think a lot of us, I think it's all about motive. And I think so a lot of us, when we move, we're taught to move our bodies to make ourselves smaller, better, faster, stronger. We're trying to become something better. We're trying to make our bodies better rather than treating them like they're already good. So for me, when I go on a 2 mile run or a 6 mile run or a 10 mile run, it's not about like beating anyone else. It's not about proving anything for anybody else. It is about me soaking up every ounce of time that I can get with God and fighting defeat with every footstep. And that's also the same way that I take a nap also. Like, listen, I'm bringing free for body shame. Like I get to just take a load off right here. But so all that being said, I in the same way that I would ask like pokey follow-up questions about people who want to lose weight, I would ask the same thing for all of us about exercise. Are you doing something that's not fun, that's not life-giving, that doesn't leave you more in awe of God? Do not do it. If I was exercising in any way that made me feel bad about myself, made me feel bad about other people, made me like feel defeated, I would want to stop it immediately. I love exercise. I think it's God's gift to us. It's good. It feels great. It's so beautiful. But I don't think we have to do it from a shame-based mentality. And what's more, I understand how most of us don't understand that because it's all we're told to do. If you go to any exercise class, like all you, unfortunately, most of what you're getting spoken of your body is shame, and shame-centered motivation, like get better or else.
Hey friends, just taking a short break to tell you about the Dwell Bible app. I have been using the Dwell app for a while now, and it is absolutely changing the way that I am listening to scripture and remembering it. They have built the most beautiful listening and reading experience for the scriptures. They've handpicked voices that read you the scriptures and even have background music that can play over it. But one of the coolest things about Dwell is their new read-along experience. If you've ever seen Apple Music's lyrics feature, then that's exactly what you can expect as you read along at Dwell. Gorgeous backgrounds and big, bold text that scrolls as the narrator reads to you. They also have listening plans, playlists, and so many more features that are so helpful for listening and remembering scripture. I'm telling you, I think that you're going to absolutely love the Dwell app as much as I do, and they were kind enough to give my listeners a discount. If you go to dwellapp.io/boldlypursuing, you can get 10% off of a yearly subscription or 33% off of Dwell for Life, which is a $50 discount. So I'd love to have you go try it out. I know that you're going to love it as much as I do. And again, you just go to dwellapp.io/boldlypursuing to get started today. Now back to our conversation. Jess, you say that we don't talk a lot about it in the church, but why do you think body image or body freedom isn't addressed in the church as something we could release people of more?
I think some of the good reasons, I'll start with that because I'm a positive person for the most part. I think some of the good reasons we don't talk about it is because we don't want to hurt feelings. I think some of the good reasons are, maybe that might have been the only one. That's all I got right now. Okay, here's some of the bad reasons I think we don't talk about it. I think we're terrified. I think we're terrified to talk about freedom. I think that we are worried that if people get free, that they won't be contained anymore. And I think that feels wild and a little bit scary. I think that we don't always have words and we don't always have easy answers from people about their bodies. And that's hard when we start talking about weakness and pain and disappointment in our flesh. We don't always have answers for that. It's just not as tidy and as quick as I think as we'd like it to be. I think that's one reason. I think that in general, the enemy of our souls and the enemy of God's church has always loved pitting men and women against each other. And I think that one way that wild tension and separation between male and female stays in existence is the objectification of women. And so I think if women stay convinced that their bodies and how other people view them, that is like tied up in their value and their worth, that they don't have kingdom worth outside of their beauty and outside of their potential fruitfulness, then that tension stays. And I think the enemy likes that. All that being said, I think the enemy is the enemy. I think the enemy of our souls is the enemy. I love the church. I'm a leader in the local church. And I say that as someone who's wildly complicit in this and that I've been leading in the local church since I became a believer. Essentially, I first went on staff at a church when I was 18. And so I often say I've never heard a full length sermon on body image, but I've also never given one until the last 6 months. So like I'm in this, I'm with you in this. And I noticed also as a leader in the local church, my husband and I started a church 7 years ago here in Charleston. And one of the first things that was really difficult for me to get over was that this sounds so selfish and it's just so honest, is that all the women weren't like me. And I think I had this perception that we would be into the same things and that we'd like the same things and that we'd experience God in the same ways. And I thought like, oh, they'd all read their Bible in the morning, like I read my Bible in the morning, and they'd all like the things that I'd like. And we'd listen to the same music and we'd read the same books. And I think that it can be intimidating when people's freedom looks different. And at the same time, I just think we need varied expressions of freedom to get the fullness of the body of Christ. So, now I've learned that it's so cool that my friends like different books than I like. And it's so cool that, they experience and hear from God in different ways. And it looks different and it sounds different and they've seen him in different ways. And that actually helps me know him better. But yeah, I think no matter the reasons, there could be a lot more, and there probably are a lot more good reasons why we don't talk about body image in the church. I think, no matter the reasons, it's time, because our people are struggling. And I think if 2020 has taught us anything as a culture, it's that avoiding hard topics doesn't serve any of us. And moving toward them in grace and compassion and curiosity usually means that we all get to grow.
So knowing what you know now, when you look back, can you see the moment you started setting standards for your body or started wanting something to be different?
I don't remember a moment in my body where I didn't set standards for my body. I don't remember a moment in my body where I didn't want something different. That's my honest story. My earliest memory is feeling shame in my body as far back as I can go. And I'm one of those people with a very freakishly long, like, childhood memory. It really bothers my parents because I remember way too much. But my earliest memory is not liking my body. So I don't remember. And I have a lot of memories of young adulthood, of childhood, where people spoke negatively toward me about my body or spoke negatively about their body. But I don't actually have like a nuclear memory of someone telling me my body wasn't good and then me feeling it. I instinctively felt it. That's what I remember first. So that's unfortunately my story. I feel like this is the question, I get from women a lot, like, or even the things I notice in stories. I think it can be a lot harder for women who had like a breaking day, either, you know, in their teens or, in their 20s or in their 30s, where they were like, I felt okay. And then all of a sudden I didn't. I think that can be really jarring. But my personal story is, yeah, I always felt that way.
So I know we are always talking about social media in comparison, but what role do you believe social media plays in the way we view our bodies specifically?
I don't think it's super helpful, but I'm going to tell you this. I don't think social media started this thing. I don't think it's social media's fault. I don't hate the internet. But I do think it's interesting. Somebody was telling me the other day, you know, when we talk about body image, we often talk about our mothers, our grandmothers, our aunts. You know, a lot of people have wounds from childhood or from their family of negative things that were spoken over them, bondage that they experienced. And this person I was talking to was telling me, like, you know, it seemed like in the 70s and the 80s, like, women were just in so much bondage about weight loss and how their bodies looked. And you think back to the 60s and the performance-based mentality that was there. And I was like, yeah, but also now we're putting filters over our face. We are putting fake faces on. Like, we are putting fake faces on. That's crazy pants. Like, can you imagine if we had told one of our grandmothers, like, you know, you really should talk about dieting less. One day we're just going to fake it. We're just gonna like completely touch our photos and zoop, zoop, zoop and make ourselves. I mean, like, that is crazy and wild and bondage. So I don't think that social media is helping. I don't think it's the problem. I don't think it's the enemy, but I certainly don't think it's helping. My biggest issue with social media is this: everyone's lying. That's it. That's my problem. Everyone's lying. No one looks how they say they look. And that's making us all hate the way we actually look. And it's perpetuating a very false reality for a lot of people. I'm deeply concerned. I'm deeply concerned about our daughters and our granddaughters. And in general, I think that this generation coming behind us is eager for freedom in a way that I certainly wasn't when I was their age, and that makes me hopeful. But at the same time, they were born into and handed a false reality about beauty. And that makes me nervous for them. And more than it makes me nervous, even from the perspective of them comparing themselves to other people in false pictures, I'm really interested in the effects of like filters and how they see themselves and how that's perpetuating body dysmorphia in just a really intense way. So I don't think it's helping at all. I think that the cool thing is we can fight it by not lying about how we look when we go on the internet.
So I think we all know that a woman's self-image goes far beyond issues with eating and exercise. But I mean, it includes things like trauma and abuse, infertility, physical injury, illness, so many other things. So how do you encourage women to find rest and healing by focusing on what God has called good?
Well, I think that one of the answers is tied up in that question, in that statement. I think a lot of us need to get healing from our trauma. I think a lot of us need to ask God's perspective on these areas of weakness that we've experienced, our sickness. I think we need a more complex gospel that helps us understand the pain that we experience in our body and the weakness that we experience in our flesh. Because unfortunately, when we don't have like complex and honest and truth-filled answers, we fill in the blanks. And I think that what the enemy does for a lot of women is just tells them, like, your trauma, your pain, your sickness, your weakness, your infertility, that's all your fault. that's all your fault, rather than us having this complex understanding that like, these are the effects of living under the fallen world. None of us caused this. None of us made this. God is actually deeply grieved over our trauma, our pain, our sickness, our infertility. Like these things cause him grief. And he will use them for his glory. He will bring like purpose to our pain, but he does not love it. He does not delight in it. And he certainly isn't punishing us. So I think we need to look at a lot of that for us to experience healing. And so, I think a big part of the path for me was going back to some of those moments, to moments of trauma in my past, and saying like, God, where were you in this? What were you thinking in this? What was your stance toward me in this? What was true about you in this moment? What's true about you now? And what I'm so thankful for is the promise and the hope of redemption, and how a lot of those painful moments for me are the biggest areas where I've experienced healing, because those weaknesses have just hit the air. They've hit the light, and his love and his mercy and his grace and his healing has come toward me.
Okay, Jess, one last question. You have been so open about your personal health struggles over the years and how you had been praying about your health issues. So to someone who is watching your story from the outside, seeing that God hasn't taken these health issues away, tell us why the heck you still believe in Jesus.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it's the answer everybody will like. I mean, he's kind of all I've got. So that's my personal perspective. Like, he's kind of all I've got. Here's my viewpoint. If God isn't real, we are in a mess. Like, we're in a mess. If God isn't real, then this right now is as good as it's going to get. And that stinks. If God is real, then redemption is on the way. Healing is on the way. Every tear is going to be wiped away. This pain is going to make sense. And that's what my mind knows. And so that mind truth helps me. Like, okay, I think at the end of the day, I don't always believe this, but I just want to believe like, it's got to get better than this. It's got to get better than this. If God isn't real, we're basically on a rock hurtling through space with nothing keeping us together, no master plan. And that sounds horrible. So I'm a little bit of a deep thinker. And when I start to think about that, I panic. And so then I'm like, okay, I'm going to go with God. I'm going to go with that option. That sounds better. So that's the thinky piece of me, the feely piece of me, the like spirit piece of me, is that I've just experienced his healing in the midst of my sickness. And for me, right, in the broken pieces that are still there, I went through in the midst of this launch, I had a little health scare, and I had to go into the hospital for a biopsy. And we're in the middle of the pandemic, so you're going into a room by yourself. You can't have any support people there. You can't have anybody there. And I'm like, this is you and me, bro. Like, you like me? You love me? Are you real? If this doesn't go well, you got me. Like, are you going to be there if I die? You're all I got. and the truest thing I can say is like, the feely piece of me is like, I'm flooded with peace and comfort, and I can take a deep breath and I can say like, you're good. Okay. You're all I got. Let's keep going. That's not a very theological answer, but he's all I've got. I'm betting on Jesus, and it's working. And I just would rather get to the end of all of this. This is the least theological answer ever. I just feel like I'm either going to get to the end of all this and be like, well, I was super wrong. That was embarrassing. Like, my bad, guys. Or I'm going to get there and he's going to say like, well done, daughter. You listened to me. You walked with me. You were kind of kooky sometimes. You ate a lot of bagels, but like, I love you. You're good. Get in here. I like that plan. So I'm hoping for that, but I love that question.
Jess, thank you so much for being here today and having this conversation. I have loved getting to hear your perspective on this and see what your book is doing. So thank you again for being here with us today.